Chapter 13, The Megabuck Mob Acts. Harvey Brandt flew up the stairs and ran down the hall, skidding to a stop in front of Rick's door. Then, conscious that her burst of speed was less than dignified, she drew herself up and tapped on the door gently. Rick had just finished dressing. He opened the door and his eyebrows went up at Barbie's poorly concealed excitement. "What's up?" he demanded. "Atom bomb ticking in the library or something?" Barbie made a heroic effort to be casual. "I just thought you might be interested. The houseboat is anchored in North Cove." Rick was very interested. North Cove was between Spindrift and Whiteside Pier. He felt a tingle of excitement. Was the enemy closing in? "Did you see it?" he asked.
"No, but Dad did. He went over to pick up the morning papers. And there it was. It must have gone by during the night."
"Thanks, Barbie," Rick said absently. His mind was already exploring the possibilities. The houseboat had taken up the ideal position for watching comings and goings from Spindrift. The cove was even close enough so that the sound of the Sky Wagon's engines could be heard clearly. Yet, according to Steve, the people on it were ordinary enough. There was nothing suspicious about them, except that they had the only pram in the area. He wondered if perhaps the pram had nothing to do with the attack on Duke and Jerry. After all, people on houseboats had to land once in a while for shopping. In the same moment, he realized that Whiteside was closed tight on Sunday evenings. There was nothing to be bought. That was when the attack had taken place. He ate breakfast with minimum conversation, only vaguely conscious that the others were watching him with interest, aware that he was chewing over the problem in his own fashion. After breakfast, Scotty broke in.
"Well, what's all the high brain activity leading up to?"
Rick was just about ready. "A couple of things. First, we have only two possibilities for enemy contacts in the area, the houseboaters and the barber. There may be others, but we don't know about them."
"All right. What do we do about it?"
"Well, suppose both are involved. Is that a reasonable assumption?" Scotty nodded thoughtfully.
"I think so. The barber ties in because he came from Washington and he has the machine. The houseboaters tie in because of the pram."
"Okay. Then if both are involved, they have to contact each other sometime. They have to exchange information, at the very least." Scotty was with him.
"And it would be easier for the houseboaters to contact the barber than vice versa, because everybody has to get their hair cut sooner or later, right?"
100%. "So we keep watch on both. I'll work it out with Joe Blake. We could keep watch by day, when possibility of contact is greatest because the barber shop is open. The yachting team on the mainland can keep watch by night, because if the houseboaters and the barber meet at night, it will have to be in the woods. Anywhere in town would be too obvious, except for the barber shop." Barbie and Jan had listened in silence, but Barbie could contain herself no longer.
"Are we going to help?"
To Barbie's astonishment, Rick nodded. She had expected opposition. "You and Jan can keep watch on the houseboat. Scotty and I will take the mainland. If the houseboaters start for Whiteside Pier, you'll tell us. We'll pick them up as they land and trail them." Barbie nodded, pleased. "The Megabuck mob goes into action. We'll use the radio network, right?"
"Yeah.
First thing is, where do you take up position? If I remember correctly, you can see North Cove from the attic. It'll be kind of hot up there, but maybe we can rig a fan."
"We won't mind,"
Jan said swiftly.
"When do we start?"
"Right now." Scotty spoke up.
"You said you had a couple of things. What's the other one?"
"We have to get a look at that barber's machine. I don't know how we'll do it, but we can figure something out." In the back of Rick's mind was the thought that the houseboaters might have moved nearer Whiteside for the purpose of contacting the barber, as well as to get a better look at traffic between Spindrift and the mainland. If that were true, they had better hurry. He had another thought. "What time is it?" Barbie consulted her watch.
5 before 8. Why?
The barbershop doesn't open until 9. I think it might be useful to have somebody call on the houseboaters and try to pump them a little. Might be interesting to hear why they chose to anchor in North Cove. Barbie's eyes got round.
Would you do it?
Rick shook his head. No, it can't be anybody from Spindrift or the police. It has to be somebody plausible. I'm thinking Captain Mike.
Hey, that's just the ticket.
Scotty shook Rick's hand solemnly.
Captain Mike can pretend to be fishing, the way he used to when he was keeping an eye on Crick House. He could drift over to the houseboat and ask for a drink of water or something, strike up a conversation. They think he was just a typical salty character.
Then that's how we'll do it, Scotty. Suppose you get the binoculars for Barbie, then rig up a fan. I'll go get Captain Mike. Won't take long, and we can have something set before the barbershop opens.
Scotty helped Rick push the plane out from the beach, then collected the binoculars. Rick warmed the plane up and checked the gas. He could use a few minutes to gas up, too. There was a pier in Seaford where he could land and get the proper grade of fuel. He taxied out, headed into the wind, and took off. Then, to confuse watchers, he headed straight for Whiteside. As he passed over the cove, he saw the houseboat, anchored in the best position for watching the Spindrift Whiteside boat course. His mouth was set in a straight line. Maybe there was no proof, but how much circumstantial evidence was needed to point to a picture? He was sure the houseboat was part of the plot against the project. Far inland, out of sight of the coast, he swung south, picked up Salt Creek, and followed it to Smuggler's Reef. He turned down the coast past the town and buzzed Captain Mike's shack and landed. Captain Mike Aloysius Kevin O'Shannon was at the pier when he docked. Rick cut the engine and climbed out onto the pontoon. He heaved a line to the old seaman, who hauled him to the pier. Captain Mike was nearly 70 years old, but as Rick well knew, he had the vigor and keen mind of a man 20 years his junior. Under the battered master's cap was a thatch of white hair and a strong, weather-beaten face.
"About time you paid a friendly call," Captain Mike greeted him. "Sorry I found no strangers for you. Was going to call today. Where's Scotty?"
Rick felt a twinge of conscience. He had intended to pay a visit to his friend so many times, but something always seemed to get in the way. It had been many weeks since his last call.
"It isn't exactly a social call, Captain Mike," he said apologetically. "We need your help."
The old man looked at him quizzically.
"What for? Fishing or detecting?"
"Detecting," Rick answered.
"Accepted. Now I see why you were looking for strangers. When and where do I start?"
"Right now, at Spindrift. Can you come?"
"Wait, I'll turn off my coffee pot. Anything I'll need?"
"We'll want you to do a little fishing, too." Captain Mike nodded and hurried up the pier to his shack. In a few minutes he was back, rod case and tackle box in hand. He cast off and climbed into the plane.
"Let's go, boy. Time's a-wastin'. Who are we after this time?"
Rick started the engine and was airborne before he answered. Then almost immediately he had to land again to take on gas. By the time he was in the air, en route to Spindrift, Captain Mike was squirming so impatiently that the whole plane seemed to vibrate.
"Well, get on with it, boy," he said irritably.
Rick smiled. "All right. We don't know who we're after," Captain Mike grunted.
"Seriously, we don't. Some folks in a houseboat are anchored in North Cove. We want to find out why."
Captain Mike nodded sagely.
"For no reason. They just might be dangerous criminals, so you want to investigate. All right, go ask them."
"We can't. We want you to go fishing and work your way to the houseboat. Ask for a drink of water or something. Then find out if you can what they're doing."
"Got it all worked out, have you?" The old captain snorted. "Where's the fun in that? Like to do things me own way."
Rick hurriedly backtracked.
"Okay, do it any way you like. We just want the information."
"What for?"
Rick sighed.
"I can't tell you, Captain."
"Have I got untrustworthy since I saw you last then?"
"It isn't that. It's,
It's a government matter. Captain Mike smacked his right thigh with a calloused hand.
I should have known. All right, Rick, I'll do it. Then maybe I can get me congressman to tell me what I've done.
Rick made a great swing round Whiteside, pointing out the houseboat to Captain Mike as he passed North Cove and landed off Pirates Field. Scotty was waiting. After greeting the old seaman, Scotty said, "The girls are watching from the attic. When do we get started?" "As soon as Captain Mike is fixed up." Captain Mike was pretty self-sufficient and required little attention. A cup of hot coffee, a jug of fresh water, a little bait and a rowboat, and he was on his way. Fortunately, the Spindrift boat landing was not in sight of North Cove. Captain Mike sculled slowly along the shore. He would emerge at the cove, surprising the houseboaters. They were engaged in making themselves comfortable on an old bed they had dragged in front of the window from which North Cove could be seen. He borrowed the glasses and looked at the houseboat, then handed them back, satisfied. They could see everything that went on. Barbie had her plastic set in place. Rick checked and found that she had forgotten to turn it on. He grinned at her embarrassment. "I'll call you from downstairs, and again when we get set on the mainland. Good luck." The girls echoed the wish. Captain Mike was fishing, allowing the rowboat to drift slowly in the direction of the cove. Rick watched a while and was satisfied. If anybody could put it over, Captain Mike could. "Now," he asked Scotty, "how do we get to Whiteside without attracting attention?" Scotty scratched his head. "I don't know, unless you want to walk. We could cross the tidal flats and hike to town." Rick vetoed that. "No, it's too far and too slow. The barber would have time to cut 20 heads of hair before we got there. How about asking Jerry to come for us?" "That's it. He could come down the wood road, pick us up right behind the island. He knows the way." Rick went into the library and called the Morning Record number. Duke Burroughs answered. Rick explained that they had to get to Whiteside by the back way, without volunteering why. Duke hesitated, but then agreed to send Jerry. Rick smiled as he hung up. "Duke will get a story out of this somehow. He's so curious, he could burst a seam. Come on, Jerry will get started right away." Just before 9 o'clock, the boys and Jerry arrived at the newspaper office. Jerry was about to burst with curiosity, but he wasn't going to let it get the better of him. He hadn't asked a single question all the way from the wood road back of Whiteside into town. Duke Burroughs was apparently taking the same tack. He looked up as the boys entered, grunted, then continued working on the following day's editorial. "Something just occurred to me," Rick said, after greeting the editor. "Isn't this pretty early for you and Jerry to be at work? I thought a morning paper didn't open for business until afternoon."
"We never sleep," Duke said without interrupting his work. "What do you think this is, the New York Times?"
"It never occurred to me," Rick said politely, "although the quality of the paper is about the same." The editor looked at Jerry.
"When he talks like that, he wants something. What do you think it is?"
"Search me. I don't know what these two want. And I don't know when they got deaf. Notice they're both wearing hearing aids."
Duke hadn't. The boys grinned at his look of astonishment.
"What we'd like," Scotty said, "if you care to cooperate, is to have someone take a look at the barber shop. We want to know if the new barber is on the job."
Duke sharpened his pencil with loving care while using a penknife.
"I won't ask why you can't take a look yourselves," he said finally. "It's pretty obvious."
"Not to me,"
Jerry objected. "It should be. They don't want the barber to get a look at them because he saw them in Washington. They don't want him to know they're interested, or that they know he's in town."
Rick started to ask how Duke had known that much. Then he realized that the editor had simply drawn the correct conclusion from the few words that had been said before. Again, Rick gained a clear insight into how a little information can be built up into a lot. No wonder Steve and his people had so much trouble protecting official secrets. Duke put his pencil down and rose.
"It happens I need a haircut. Stand by."
At the door he paused.
Anything else you want to know?
We want to know everything we can about his massage machine, Rick said urgently.
Can you do that, Duke, please?
Particularly if it has any electrical connections besides the wall plug?
Duke studied them thoughtfully for a long moment, then turned and left.
Jerry watched his boss leave.
You know, he's kinder to you two than I would be. He didn't ask a single question, even about the hearing aids.
Rick considered. There was nothing secret about the Megabuck network, except that he and Barbie would use it for a mind-reading act. Jerry was trustworthy. He wouldn't give the act away.
Promise you'll keep this to yourself? Rick said.
And at the reporter's excited nod, he took the tiny receiver from his ear and handed it to Jerry. The reporter held it to his own ear, moving closer to Rick because the cord was just long enough to reach from ear to inner pocket.
Rick said, Barbie, say hello to Jerry.
Apparently Barbie did, because Jerry gave a surprise start.
Can I talk to her? Jerry asked.
Barbie answered the question herself. The microphone, built into the little unit, was very sensitive, and Rick's thin jacket did not muffle it very much.
I'm fine, Jerry said.
Rick grinned. Scotty could hear both sides of the conversation through his own set. Now he broke in.
Any activity yet?
Captain Mike is fishing right near the houseboat. I can see the people on the houseboat, but they're having breakfast on the rear deck. Where are you?
In the newspaper office. Duke has gone to check on the barber.
Rick held out his hand and Jerry gave him the earpiece, grinning.
What a rig, the reporter marveled. Where'd you get that?
We built it. During the next half hour, while they waited for Duke to return, Rick told Jerry the story of the Megabuck mob. He omitted only what followed when Steve Ames had arrived. Then Duke returned, freshly barbered, trying to scratch his back.
One thing about this new barber, he said, greeting them. He's no better at keeping hair out of your shirt than Vince is. Why is it that barbers can't cut hair without it getting into places where it itches?
Rick smiled sympathetically. He knew how it was. No matter how careful a barber tried to be, it seemed impossible to get a haircut without a shower of hair clippings down your back. Usually they lodged where it was impossible to scratch.
Duke rubbed his back against the door frame like a bear.
It's Vince Larder's day off, he began.
Rick tensed. If the houseboaters were going to contact the barber, they would naturally try to choose a time when they could see him alone. Maybe there had been an earlier contact, and the barber had told them he would be alone today. That might account for the houseboats moving closer to Whiteside.
Vince has gone fishing, the editor grinned. I suspect that's the only reason he got a helper, so he could go fishing more often. There isn't really enough work in town for more than one barber.
Did you get a look at the massage machine? Rick asked anxiously. The editor nodded.
It's nothing but a hood. Three ordinary massage gadgets inside. Vibrator heads, I think they're called.
I'll tally with the description Steve's agent given. Did you examine it closely?
Yes, there's only one cord attached, the power cord. But I did notice an interesting thing. Set around the edges are little discs, like round covers. I started to lift one up, but the barber asked me to stop. He said the machine is adjusted very carefully and I might upset the adjustment.
Tough look, Scotty said disappointed.
Oh, I don't know. I got enough of a look to see two tiny holes in a piece of stuff the disc covered. The stuff was black, probably plastic, like telephones are made of.
In other words, Rick said slowly, you saw holes for electrical plugs.
I think so. I don't know what else they could be.
Rick and Scotty exchanged glances.
What does that mean? Jerry asked.
Rick answered, we don't know. And I'm not kidding, we really don't know.
I believe you, Duke said briefly. Okay, I've done my bit, including getting my hair cut. Anything else?
We'd like to stick around, Rick replied. Jerry already knows about this, but Barbie is watching a houseboat anchored in North Cove. If anybody leaves the houseboat for the Whiteside Pier, she'll call us. We'll take over at the pier. It just might happen that the houseboater will pay a call on the barber.
Duke didn't comment, but Rick knew the editor's mind was at work.
Make yourself at home, Duke said.
and went back to his editorial writing. Now and then Barbie called, wanting to chat, but Rick discouraged her. He was reasonably sure the enemy wouldn't be listening in on the extremely short wavelength on which the Megabuck network operated, but there was no use taking any chances. After each conversation, he identified the sets with his own amateur call letters, even though it was unlikely anyone could hear the conversation. The little sets operated essentially on a line of sight because of the short wavelength used. They couldn't be heard beyond the horizon, if they were heard that far. After an hour of waiting, Barbie called in high excitement. Captain Mike was aboard the houseboat. The boys waited anxiously for some further report, but Barbie was only able to say that the old seaman had departed after a 10-minute visit and was now fishing again. At noon, Jerry and Scotty slipped out for a sandwich. When they returned, Rick and Duke went to eat. According to Barbie, all was quiet. Around 1 o'clock, Captain Mike returned to Spindrift and reported a friendly conversation with the houseboaters. They had anchored in North Cove because someone down the coast had told them fishing was good around there, which was a true statement. The retired skipper had only one additional comment, which Barbie relayed. The folks had been friendly, but he thought they were a little nervous and anxious to be rid of him. He had no other information of value. At mid-afternoon, Jerry went out on a brief sortie, came back, and reported business was slow in the barber shop, which was not unusual for a Tuesday. The barber was reading a magazine. Rick and Scotty were restless. The chairs of the newspaper office were hard, and they had exhausted the reference material on the bookshelves. Duke Burrows looked up from a story he was editing and grinned. "Espionage isn't as adventurous as some folks would like you to believe. It's generally nothing but sitting and waiting, just as you're doing now." Rick grinned back. Duke was telling him nothing he didn't know. He had certainly waited like this before. Barbie called urgently.
"Rick, the pram is leaving. One man in it. He's just starting the outboard motor now."
"All right. Let us know which way he goes." In a moment, Barbie answered.
"He's going to the Whiteside Pier."
"Roger, we're moving."